Senate Bill 823 is not going to be heard today, so if you are here to testify with respect to Senate Bill 823, it's not going to be heard. And we'll start today with Senate Bill 899. Representative Butler is present. And is Senator Carno here with you or no?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Tom Butler. I represent House District 60 in southeastern Oregon. I'd like to tell you it's the largest political district in the state. However, Senator Harper has the larger one because it includes 200 miles of square miles in in Klamath County, Klamath Falls. Senate Bill 899 from Senator Carno is a bill which was finally drafted while I was out of town. Senator Carno and I had worked on together in an attempt to take a look at the potential of bringing collections back up to a higher standard relative to what they have been in the benchmark for our circuit courts throughout the state. What it basically does, and I did not bring any visual aids, but what it basically does is it asks what's the highest percentage that any of the circuit courts in the state have been collecting of the fines that they have imposed over the last 5 years. Some counties may be at 40%, some counties may be at 50%, and let's just assume that the highest county that you've got is collecting at 70% of the fines that they have imposed over the last 5 years. That county that imposes and collects 70% is basically the starting point for the benchmark for all circuit courts in the state. And what we do is this bill tacks on 5% and says that that is the new rate, and I think they call that the benchmark rate plus 5% down in section 1 on line number 19, section 1, subparagraph 3. It adds 5% to the highest court in the state. So those circuit courts which are presently collecting 50% would have as a benchmark the highest benchmark in the state plus 5%, so that until every court or until each court is able to collect that benchmark which is originally established, then no county would receive any benefits. Now let me digress for just a moment and take you over to section 3 on page 2 of the bill. Section 3, paragraph 2, provides that all money and the monies would be distributed back out to the counties, to the group that handled the county courthouse security monies, which include includes some of the law enforcement, it includes your county commissioners, it includes the district attorney staff, it also includes some folks from the circuit court staff. So that what happens is that under this circumstance, these monies under Section 3 would be distributed excess of the amounts over the benchmark. 50% of those would come back then to be paid back in the county. And they are for 2A on lines 24, 25, They must be used for paying for technological improvements designed to improve the collection of fines in the circuit court and to provide support services for those improvements, and B, paying the salaries of the district attorney or district attorneys and their deputy district attorneys in the district. Now, you'll have some testimony that there should be some enhancements to the language relative to the utilization of these amounts, and I am not adverse to the language which would allow paying for the technological supports, inserting, and I'm looking frantically for my revised copy of the bill here, but paying for the additional technological supports that would be needed. No, I'm not going to be able to lay my hands on it, looks like, for technology to improve collections and all other technological improvements within a courtroom. And then second, on line 27, paying the salaries, and that's the county supplement. that should say the county supplemental salary. The state still has the obligation to provide for district attorney salaries and those deputies where it's appropriate as defined by the state. But this would assist then in paying, many counties do not pay a county supplement, and this would assist in assisting those counties that would like to pay supplements and then additional district attorneys as they may need them for their particular county. So coming back to the benchmark, and I don't want this to be terribly difficult, but if a county is collecting 50% and the highest county is collecting 70%, the benchmark for all circuit courts, I shouldn't say counties, the benchmark for all circuit courts would be the 70% plus the 5%. Whatever the highest court is collecting in the state plus 5%. The first dollar continues to be dispersed under the formula back to the state. So that once that county that was at 70% is now able to collect 75%, they've reached the benchmark. To the extent that they collect $1 beyond the 75%, this bill is intended to divide that dollar into two pieces. $1 coming back to the state using the same formula for the balance of the fines being levied by those circuit courts as presently constituted, and the other 50 cents on that dollar coming back to the courthouse security group to be able to be used for, again, technological improvements, including technology for collection and for supplemental DA salaries and the a deputy district attorney in those circuits. And that's primarily what this bill does. It sets a five-year pattern of collection in Section 2. It talks of to the fines imposed in all circuit courts in Section 1. And then again at the end of Section 1, Paragraph 3 provides for the benchmark of the highest level plus the 5% being the benchmark. I anticipate what would happen on a fairly immediate basis would be that we would have much better reporting, we'd have much better use of technology as to track our fines within the courts. I would also anticipate that this would engender and foster a greater level of communication and cooperation coordination between the courts and the district attorney and the other folks that are out there trying to collect those fines, because then what happens is that they actually have a stake in what goes on. And I appreciate the fact that that may give the appearance that we're after the fine monies more than we're after rehabilitation of these folks. But the bottom line is that once these folks have got their fines paid off, then they become free citizens again and have paid their debt to society as to that remuneration financial portion. So that's what this bill was intended to do. It does address a couple of issues, but primarily to leave some local control and county control together in cooperation with the other folks in the state court system at the local level.
Okay. Senator Butler.
Mr. Chair, Representative Butler, I have a question, and I haven't had a chance to really read the bill. I skimmed it just a minute ago. I'm wondering if there could be some differences among counties, and I'm just thinking, I've not talked with my own county, I'm hearing from them that right now the workload, because it's all geared to the number of judges you have, and we're way short of judges, so the number of staff to assist them is not available. And I'm wondering what this does to the workload. Would a county, and my county might say that there's some counties that frankly have more staff and judges than they do compared to the workload. Would some have an advantage over, let's say, if my county's doing everything right, and if they have a heavy workload and they're short of staff and so forth, could this come back to hit them, and where their intentions are good, but they just can't, they don't have the manpower?
Mr. Chair, Senator Duncan, thank you very much. It's a very excellent question, and certainly no one wants to penalize a county who might be at 40% collections when you've got another county that's at 70% collections. It doesn't address the underlying reason as to why County 1 is at where they're at and why County 2 is where they're at. And relative to the workload issue, It's anticipated that this would not reduce any revenues to the state, and to the extent that the legislature or the state court administrator's office felt that it was necessary to assist a county in, or a circuit court in certain counties to augment their collection procedures and policies. And I think you'll hear some testimony today from the counties, perhaps, that may bring forward just exactly that issue. There's folks that are very anxious now to come to the table and help the state in the collections matter. One of the largest collectors of government debt in the world, outside of the Internal Revenue Service, is ready, willing, and able to step forward and assist in locating those folks that owe our circuit courts the money, and will assist. And what it would do then is that, to the extent that county was at 40% and needed to come up to 75% before they were able to bring more technology dollars back, I anticipate seeing a rather substantial influx of general fund dollars come back into the state as a result of just the attempt to move that bar up, to get up to the benchmark. And so in some respects it does not benefit them, but it certainly does not penalize them right out of the saddle when you start off. I think that those issues, after just a few years under this kind of a benchmark system, will show substantially improved technology being employed within our court systems to augment those collections fairly rapidly and bring most of the circuit courts within the state up to a fairly common and even level.
Senator Harper.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I like this a lot, Representative Butler. There is no penalties in here. There are just rewards. That's the way I read it. Is that correct?
That's Mr. Chair, Senator Harper. This bill has no downside to the state. The only potential downside, and you may hear potentials as to conflicts. What happens when the DA staff sitting on the court security has a say in where those funds are siphoned, and they need additional supplements for the district attorney staff or other DA improvements. That can certainly be overridden by the county commissioners. And I would say this, the county commissioners have a lot at stake to go ahead and make sure that the technological improvements are made to enhance, and that's why you'll hear from the county folks, to enhance the collections at this particular point, because they now have an opportunity to assist their district attorney staff, which again is part of that roll up in the whole system. No downsides that I've been able to recognize, Senator Harper.
Thank you.
Any questions? Senator Nesbitt. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Butler, just curious, and I don't know if you're the one to answer this, and maybe someone will following you, but you're talking about the benchmark level. Do you have I know you're a numbers guy. I mean, do you have any idea of collectively what average counties do collect, or what is outstanding, or who our high-performing counties are in collecting debts?
Mr. Chair, Senator Metzger, thank you very much. Again, an excellent question, and I am remiss to tell you that I have heard numbers all the way from a low within our circuit courts of in the teens to a high of in the 70s. One issue that we've got relative to the technology and some of just the raw brute bookkeeping involved in this is that certain districts, certain circuit court districts, are just behind in the accounting process in relationship to where others are at in reporting and collecting. So I think you'll probably hear some excellent testimony, and I would be remiss if I tried to say I think it's something under 100%, something over zero at that particular point. That's the range I would give you, Senator.
You could be a weatherman. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you very much. And at this point, I need to ask Marilyn to introduce the person to her left so that the committee knows who he is and why he's here.
Yes. Thank you very much. I'd like to introduce to the committee Mike Thomas. He's a second-year law student at the University of Oregon and has been working with the Senate Judiciary Committee this session as an extern. He is originally from Utah and did volunteer work at the legislature in Utah. and Mike has helped prepare for this hearing today, and will be covering this bill and Senate Bill 899.
Mr. Chair, with this last figure, you see why my wife's family loved having him. He was their CPA for many, many years. He's just great.
All right. All right. Representative, thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Senator.
Well, Brad Swank is here from the State Court Administrator's Office in opposition to this, so I can mention the contrast. Brad, it's always nice to see you and hear your testimony.
Chair Menas. Members of the committee, for the record, my name is Brad Swank. I'm with the State Court Administrator's Office, and you actually don't often see us taking positions on bills, and this is one that we are, and we're not taking a position for the reasons you might think. I'm going to give you a little history. We're not in opposition with some of the basic tenets of what Representative Butler is trying to do and what Representative Butler has explained. He believes the collection should be better. He believes that more money could potentially be obtained. He has an interest in seeing that monies go to district attorneys. All of those are good things. But this bill, I think, is based on a misunderstanding of court collections and how court collections are done and what happens, and taking us a direction that we believe that you probably don't want to go. Not on the end goal of making more monies, but on the process of how you collect money, because we think it's based on a misunderstanding. In 1985, when the courts were first taken over by the states, the total responsibility for collecting monies at that point was in the counties, and the district attorneys did it. And at that time in the statute, there were a whole bunch of different provisions, and the money went to the counties back then, by the way, too. And there are a whole bunch of different little provisions that set aside monies. So much from this kind of offense went to this kind of program, and so much from this kind of offense went to this program. And there was a formula for figuring out how much went to this, and there was a formula for figuring out how much went to that. As a result of which, each county had its own, each circuit court, which is each judicial district, and these are, judicial districts are not county functions, they're state functions. You pay for the judicial districts. We run the courts. They are not county courts, they are state courts, so you pay for the personnel in them. But each county had its own arcane, complicated, difficult to maintain accounting system for all of these distributions that they did and all these monies that they gave to everybody, and there were more than 18 different statutory organizations who got some kind of funding stream from the courts. Starting in the late 90s, or in the, I'm sorry, the late 80s, we, the State Court Administrator's Office, started working with the Ways and Means Committee on the collections issues and on the accounting issues. And we worked to create a single accounting system for all of the circuit courts and to create a revenue stream. And we worked to create a dependable, predictable revenue stream. And that currently runs for the criminal things. It runs through an account called the Criminal Fines and Assessments account. And we took all of those local counties and we took them out of the business of having to run complicated systems where they did a lot of disbursements and they had to keep account of the money that went to this account and to that account and to that account. So rather than having 36 different complicated accounting systems, we pulled it in and we made it one. And we did that by eliminating the kind of special program that has to be done on a local basis in each county that's created by Senate Bill 899. We created a single revenue stream that flows to the county, goes into the CFAA account. It's predictable. We can tell the Ways and Means Committee how much money within a reasonable guess, you know, because you're predicting the future, but how much money that's going to create, and then they can give it back out to the programs. And most of the programs, or many of the programs that were in the original funding stream, have now come into the Senate Criminal Fines and Assessments account, and they get their money handed to them by the legislature through that account. And what it has done is eliminated a lot of the local complication, a lot of the necessity for each local court to have due disbursements, to handle complicated sets of accounting and complicated books, and for, you know, a program to be getting checks from 36 different counties, because each county was sending independent monies to all of these programs, and that was a problem. So we created this funding system, and currently in that funding system that this money goes to, that we're talking about here, you are funding things like monies for victims of crime, monies for abused children, monies for victims of domestic abuse, state police crime lab and other state police functions. Education gets money under that. Local governments get some money out of that for their program. Sexual assault victims, wounded police officers and their families, and the rural emergency rural medical services are among the programs that benefit from that funding stream that we created. Now, the problem with this bill is that it sets a precedent, an accounting precedent, for taking back to the local counties and trying to take money out of that funding stream before it enters the funding stream at the local level. It would defeat 12 years of work that we have been working on to create a unified accounting system where all of this doesn't have to be done at the local level, where they put the money at the local level, we give it to you and you can defend it, and you disperse it at the legislative level and decide where it's going to go, and that has worked very well. We think it'll create a precedent for going back to the kind of statutory system where people are trying to get their piece at the beginning and trying to have the local court take money off before it fits into the legislative revenue stream, and we think ultimately it will make government more complicated, harder to understand, and more expensive, because we'll have to maintain more complicated accounting systems than we currently do, and we'll have to, rather than being a unified accounting system, it will have to be in all 36 counties. So that's our first reason for not being able to support this bill, because it's heading exactly back where we came from. The second thing you could understand is counties don't have anything to do with collections and circuit courts. Circuit courts are not county agencies. They are state entities, another branch of government, and they are run through the state court administrator's office, and all of the collections that are done by circuit courts, well, people talk about circuit court collections. The function that circuit courts serve in relation to collections is that we got to get the paperwork done. Okay. If the paperwork isn't done, if the judgments aren't entered, if the money isn't entered in the computer so people will know how much has to be collected and how much has been collected and those sorts of things, then it can't be collected. It's true. In Multnomah County, we have a backlog of cases that can't be collected currently. And some estimates go as high as $90 million, and that's because the information hasn't been entered in the computer. And it's because we don't have court staff to catch up on that backlog of collections. Now, the counties don't provide the staff that enters that information in the computer. You do. We have a package in at Ways and Means this session to try and get some staff so we can get that money entered in the computer so it can be collected, because it's just sitting out there uncollectible because the paperwork isn't done right now. So the counties don't have anything to do with that. We have been working with Ways and Means on those packages. We have been increasing our collections steadily. We've had a program to work with Ways and Means since 1994, where each session we go in and we talk to Ways and Means. We see what resources they can afford to us each session. It's not money that's given to the counties. This is money that we use to put the information in. And then we've worked so we can, once we get the information put in, we go to other party collectors. We may send initial letters out of the circuit court saying, you owe this money. But when that money becomes overdue and people haven't paid, we do very little collecting actually in the circuit court. Those collections go to the Department of Revenue, where the Department of Revenue can collect on them through their collections or through the refund of those monies that would go back. And we've also recently started using third-party collectors, where we give it out to the private industry for them to go out and collect. And we've just signed with a new, and this is statewide, that we do accounts for all circuit courts. So we are working on interfacing, on developing the information that these people who are really collections professionals, because court clerks do not collect money. They take money over the county, over the counter, but they don't issue garnishments to collect. We've got we work with the Collections Association. We have those sorts of things. So we use professional collections. We are working on improving these collections. We've been working with the Ways and Means Committee. We have a bill right now in Ways and Means to bring the courts into the same collections requirements that were established. And I know you worked on last session for the administrative branch of government, for the executive branch of government, requirements were established for them. We brought in our own bill this session to bring us in line with what's being done with the executive branch of government, to increase our capability of reporting so you know what money's coming in. We think this bill takes us in the wrong direction. It takes us back to the days where we didn't have a unified accounting system, where we weren't working session to session to improve accounting, to improve collections, to go to the professionals, and so it was harder to control and operate the money. And for you to have control over who gets that money and what programs it funds.
Brad, let me ask you a question.
Yes.
Because I kind of understand where you're going, and I understand the structural problems that you're raising with respect to how the bill's constructed and what's mm-hmm. currently happening. But what is the collection rate statewide?
Well, we ran some projection. We think that on the whole statewide, what we're looking at now, it's around 75%, roughly, give or take. And one of the things that we're working on, well, one of the things that we have been working on with Ways and Means over the past 2 years is a way for us to get those collection rates down so we can start reporting them. That took computer advances to be able to do that. We've been working on it so we can establish collections rates. And that's one of the pieces that's coming in this year so that we're doing the same kind of reporting that the executive branch is so you can tell what collections rates are. And that's part of the package that we've got down there with House Bill 2333 that we have been working on with them over the past 2 years.
All right. We have Senate Bill 70 set sometime next week, which is a bill that purportedly would authorize new judges.
Yes.
And Judge Ellis in Multnomah County tells me that they do have a staffing problem in terms of personnel. In fact, we've talked before session that he really wouldn't want new judges, is what he told me. He may have changed his mind since then, but he would rather have support staff. But I'm kind of surprised. You're telling me they've got a $9 million backlog of entries.
Not nine.
Huh?
Chairman, it's 90.
Nine-zero?
Nine. The estimates go as high as $90 million.
Multnomah County. And why aren't we doing something about that?
Well, we're trying. It takes.
Really, we're trying.
Well, it takes our ability to collect is directly related and to the resources.
You ever heard of like a temp service?
Yeah, but it's, Chairman, it still costs money to hire temps.
Well, but wait a minute. I've been down in Ways and Means. You work out a simple deal. This is the cost of the temp. This is how many people we think we're going to need to key punch all this data into the in that. And we'll take a portion of the $90 million to pay for it.
Chairman, that's exactly the kind of thing that we've been talking with Ways and Means about.
Okay, but when are you going to do something?
When, Chairman, when Ways and Means, when we
can. Let me ask you this question.
Yeah.
What's preventing you from doing it now? Do you not have
Chairman,
authority to do that?
No, we don't have budget resources to do that.
But you're saying you don't have the authority
right.
to spend the money to collect the money that's owed
yes.
You can't move anything around within your existing budget to make that happen.
Chairman,
can't happen.
The vast majority of the money that we have in our budget is money for personnel because we don't own the buildings that we're in and we don't own those, which makes it difficult to move money around like they can in state agencies.
I mean, and that gets me to the next question. The Multnomah County Courthouse is about ready to fall in. It's a seismic disaster. And this is the other component of the conversation I had with Judge Ellis is I wouldn't vote for new judges in our county until we get something about the facility that they're in, because frankly everybody's in jeopardy that walks through that door.
Chairman, the funding of the facility, the actual building, the bricks and mortar, is a county function. It is the one thing that when the state took over the costs of funding the personnel and the judges and the equipment and the counties.
I understand, but see, I'm sitting here in this session, you're telling me we got $90 million of uncollected resources. I'm looking at that thinking, you know what? That could be a component of that could be debt service on a brand new building.
Chairman, some of it could be. A lot of these are legacy kinds of cases that are older cases.
So
they may not be collectible. The $90 million is an estimate, and it goes as high as that. And we don't know until they're entered how much there is. It may be that some of them are old enough that it's difficult to collect on them. When we talk to the professional collectors, they say the older the debt is, the more difficult it is to collect on it.
All right. Council has a question. Did you have a question, Senator Hartman?
I just had a quick question, Chairman. I understand that the Multnomah Circuit Court also operates as a municipal court. So a fairly large portion of those are due to parking fines and other things that would in another county be handled by the municipal court. Is that correct?
Chairman, as Council O'Dell, yes, it is. It's by statute the municipal court for Portland.
And for those things that are attributable as municipal fines, are they under the same distribution scheme that you described to us?
Chairman, as Council O'Dell, my understanding is that, well, the city gets half, the state gets half. It comes to the criminal fines and assessments account just like every other state portion of criminal, of monies that come through the criminal side of the court all end up in that account. Forfeited bail, fines, unitary assessment, everything except for restitution, which we then pay out, and certain other small things, but that all comes to that one account. It was part of making that account predictable and usable by the legislature, was funneling all of these monies into it. There are also, I'd like to mention some technical difficulties with the bill. We noted a couple of things that that are problematic. For instance, if you look in lines 11 and 15, I'm sorry, my bifocals jump on me sometimes. It notes that including judgments imposed for violations entered in the circuit court in each district during the calendar years 1996, 97, 98, 99, and 2000. Actually, in the years 1996, 97, and a good part of 98, violations didn't go to the circuit court. They went to the district court because then we had district courts. And now we don't have district courts. So that's a technical issue with how the formula. We also noticed that on page 2, section 3, it talks about all of the money going to the county. And the money is to be used for either paying for technical improvements to design to improve collections of fines in the circuit court. Well, currently the counties pay no money towards collections in circuit courts. They don't. None of our funding for circuit courts, except for the mortar and bricks, comes from the counties. So that is money that it currently don't pay money to the courts for those sorts of things. And we suspect that most of the money, since it's at their discretion, would probably go to the district attorneys. I'm not saying that district attorneys don't need help. It would just, the accounting system would be cheaper and easier to use if they got it as part of their supplemental appropriation here rather than having to create a new accounting system so they could get it directly. Those are our reasons for opposition to the bill. Like I say, the underlying principles are sound. The goals that Representative Butler is headed for, to increase collections, to develop more money so that you get better information about what monies are coming in and the collections that are available and how you can use them. We all believe those are important goals, and we have been working on them for years. We believe this bill takes us in exactly the opposite direction of doing that and takes us back to the days when we had to have local complicated accounting systems that were, it just made government more difficult to run at greater cost without any particular greater benefit.
Thank you, Brad. Senator Harper, I think, has a question.
Just an observation, Mr. Chair. You know, we have a pretty good example of what centralized planning and execution does for us. I would just be curious as what that $90 million, how soon it would be collected if they could keep 50 cents on the dollar in Multnomah County. And now here at Klamath, I bet it'd take us the best part of a week.
Might be some motivation.
Well, Chair Menace, is Multnomah County Court is the largest court in the state, and they do a substantial portion of the work, somewhere between 25% to 30% of the cases statewide.
I sense we're going to have an opportunity to have some discussions about this. So,
sure.
Thank you, Brad. Senator Lester.
Brad, I just want to ask one thing. I'm just very confused here. You're mentioning, forgetting the technical problems that you'd mentioned at the end of the bill. You talked about how this sends us back to where we were of individual districts.
Yes.
I don't see that. I don't see any change in the system at all. And please help me with that. I see the system being intact, that we're setting simply a higher bar, and if a judicial district exceeds that bar, you know, then there's the distribution of funds above that level. But up into our current level, plus 5%, the system doesn't, I don't see any change in the distribution system at all, other than setting the bar a little bit higher.
Chairman,
where did I miss that?
Senator Metzger, First of all, it sets a bad precedent because when we started, many different programs got money in this way, and they each established their own formula, and they were each, some of them were tied to some kinds of offenses. So the precedent you're setting is that the money is taken out and dispersed based on local circumstances or some other circumstances.
Only at a very high level, though. Only at the top level plus 5% does that happen, according to this bill.
What? And I looked at that, but you have to do a calculation based on what each county is doing. You have to know, rather than dealing with it on the centralized accounting system, what are we doing statewide? You have to break it down county by county. And unless I read this incorrectly, the dispersals are made on a local level. Berkshire County, and yeah. So one of the things that we've managed to get rid of most of is local dispersals of checks. And that's being done through the centralized accounting system. And for this kind of payout at revenue, they pay to us, we pay to the state treasurer. There's a chunk of money that's sitting there, by and large, that the legislature gets to look at the whole amount because nothing's been taken out along the way. And it gets to look at the big chunk and say, which programs do we want to spend do we think are important enough to spend this out? If you take money out along the way, then the big chunk at the end gets smaller. And 100% of the monies, the state portions of the monies that we collect the state portion of criminal act, of the monies the court collects on crime fines and interest, 100% of that gets channeled to you, so you get to decide what to do with it. We make projections, and then the Ways and Means Committee, as Chair Minnis knows, based on those projections, spends the entire amount. If you take money out before it enters the revenue stream, as it does here, what you've got is a local accounting issue.
Senator Beyer?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You said that statewide collections is running about 75%, and Mr. Butler, Representative Butler, wasn't able to give us a county number. Can you give us a breakdown county by county?
Not currently, no. We had to do, Chair Minnis, Senator Beyer, we had to do a special estimate a couple of years ago and try and do a breakdown. We are working towards having better information on the collections rates. That is something we hope to have to Ways and Means. It's part of the package that we're working on there now. It is not something that the computer, when the states took over the courts and the court systems, some of the counties literally had pen and paper accounting systems that the courts were operating on. Some of them did all of their accounting on the back of the traffic citations that came in. So in the time that we have had the courts, we have brought all of the courts onto the same accounting system, and it's a computer-generated accounting system that's improved each year as we've gone on, so we can make those kinds of estimations. But it is not at the point yet where we can provide that county-by-county information. We would like to at some point. We believe you have a right to that information. It will help you in policy making, and we're trying to get there.
Well, Mr. Chair, could we narrow it down somewhere between 0 and 100? I mean, Representative Butler is able to give us somewhere between 0 and 100. Could you make it a little tighter than that?
Chairman, Senator Beyer, 0 and 100 for which? For
the percentage from the highest county to the lowest county.
Well, the estimate, well, Chairman, Senator Beyer, we haven't done a breakdown for on a county-by-county basis. What we have done is a breakdown based on estimates that we made on a statewide basis.
Well, Mr. Chair, the question hasn't been answered. Let me try a different way. You said there were $90 million in Multnomah County. What's the statewide figure? If we don't know percentages, can you give me dollar figures? And maybe we can figure it out on our own using paper and pencil.
Oh, what you, Chairman, Senator Beyer, what you're trying to get a feel for is the amount of uncollected outstanding debt that there is statewide coming from potentially court fines and fees.
Well, I'm trying to get at that plus what this in this bill, what the benchmark figure would be if it's the bill says whatever the highest county is plus 5%. I'm trying to get an idea of how much money is out there and how much is being collected now. And that's
okay. That is, Chairman, Senator Beyer, that is exactly the intent of our bill that's down in front of the legislature. We have, that is something that we cannot currently produce given our current systems. We are working on trying to get to ways and means by the end of session. We have been working, and that was what the bill 3509 was about last session in terms of the executive branch of government. And you may remember that was Representative Winter's bill that she worked through, and I know that it was worked on this side. It is part of creating a central accounting system is to get to that point. We don't currently have that information in a form that we can give it to you. We are working on developing that information so we can give it to Ways and Means.
Well, Mr. Chair, I guess this is frustrating because I bet the counties that were doing it on the back of matchbooks could probably give me an estimation without fancy computers. And now, since we've gone to statewide, I can't even get an estimate. I'm trying to narrow it somewhere between 0 and 100%. I can't get closer than that. And that's extremely frustrating.
Senator Harper.
Let's make sure I understand this. If you and I go call the Klamath County Court and say, you know, how many fines or what was the amount of fines you levied last year and what did you collect, they can't tell me.
I'm going to ask Susan Klosterman, she's our budget person, to come up. She actually does the money.
Who brought her up to begin with?
What?
She's the money person.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Susan Klosterman, and I'm the finance director with the Oregon Judicial Department. And Mr. Chairman and Senator Harper, we do know a lot about the receivables in the individual courts. We know how much their current outstanding accounts receivable are at any point in time. We do give to each court a quarterly collection effectiveness report, and it gives them a lot of information. What we don't have is a collectability factor by each court, which is something we're working towards. Our focus in the past has been to monitor the timely entering of all of the collections and related payment schedules into our accounts receivable management system, because that's the only way that the accounts receivable can really be managed. Once into the system, each court has tables set up to define what happens as accounts are paid or become delinquent. Past due notices are sent, or after maybe 30 days after no response on a delinquency notice, we turn it over to the Department of Revenue or to a private collection agency. So we don't have a collectability factor for each court. Statewide, we know that it's 74.5%, excluding restitution and compensatory fines. We are working to gather more information by courts and to report, and it wouldn't be by court, though, the same information that the executive branch is currently reporting to the legislative fiscal office. And we're doing some programming to put that in place by the 1st of July this year.
Follow up, Mr. Chair. So we do have receivables. I mean,
yes, we do. Yes,
okay.
We do.
And I might, I just might toss on the table for you, human nature being what it is, I mean, we're all human beings, but if there are incentive at the local level that they gather this information. I'm surprised if they didn't do it very quickly and very well.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Harper, Senator Harper, we do interact and have a policy committee comprised of the courts. We have we engage the courts in selection of the private collection agency and development of policy. And most of our good ideas as far as improving collection systems do come from the courts, a lot of those ideas. In tandem.
Yeah,
it is.
Yeah. And we do have, I mean, Chairman and Senator Harper, one of the things that we did present in this session is an enterprise fund bill to do exactly the kind of thing that you're talking about, where good ideas that created savings at the local court would generate money to come back to them. And that bill, and I don't remember the number of it off the top of my head, but it's sitting in committee. It's something the executive branch has. And we were looking to do that kind of thing to get money back to help the local courts if they came up with ideas that made things more efficient. And that's one of the things that we were trying to do. And much of the collections is related to we found that when we get resources from the legislature for collections, we actually improve collections much more than the resources that that you give to us. I know, Chairman Ennis has heard this story before. Is there other information we can...
Actually, I'd like you to, as soon as there's a report somewhere, you can print out something of collections. How much money? Do you have a report? Can you press a button on a printer someplace and give copies of it?
I could give you copies of both the statewide compilation and if there are certain courts you're interested in, I could give you a copy.
The whole state of Oregon, everything. I want to know what you know.
Okay. It would only include the Judicial Department.
Well, that's what I'm really interested in.
I'll gladly.
This is going to be tied to some other legislation that we have in this building. And Representative Butler, I think, chairs one of the committees in Ways and Means, if I'm not mistaken. So
yes, he does.
Have an important dialogue. So.
Numbers guy. He might be
He's kind of a...
if I may, Mr. Chair, you had asked why we don't collect the $90 million in Multnomah and just pay for it out of the proceeds, and that is one of the ideas that came from last session and this, through Ways and Means, and we would need statutory authority to do that and would be presenting that.
Okay, but see, I'm a dumb gumshoe policeman. If I can figure that out in just a couple of seconds, why in the heck didn't you guys figure that out a long time and make it happen?
Chairman, we need legislative approval to do that.
Did you bring it last session?
Yes, yes, we did.
And the legislature chose not to do that?
Excuse me?
The legislature chose not to bring it?
Well, considering, of course, there are other people competing for those same dollars, I mean, you know, there is always that, because it is taking money away from others when we use it for collection purposes. Although I think there is interest, and it's actually been included in our budget report to explore that as that bill is heard in Ways and Means.
What's it taken away from? I mean, other than, I mean, assuming that you collected all of this money, it would go in the CFA account,
right,
and you could disperse the way it normally does, general fund and the percentage distribution. But we're talking about the figure that's above the assumption currently. So you can easily develop a component.
Sure. Chairman, there's always
those additional resources.
There is always a bigger return on an upfront investment. We've always so far been able to make a bigger return on an upfront investment in collections in the court,
right,
where much more money has come in when the legislature invests in collections. But sometimes they've chosen not to put the money to invest in collections because they had some other purpose for it. So we continue to bring it. We understand the difficulty of having competing interests for monies, and sometimes these issues have been brought up over several sessions, and the legislature's chosen to say, not this session.
Brad, I can take issue with you with that, but I'm not going to do that. I mean, mm-hmm. you guys come in with your priorities in terms of judges and so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. I mean, the legislature, I assume, could give a directive and take a couple of judicial positions away and fund mm-hmm. staff positions and tell you to go collect the money. And once you collect mm-hmm. the money, then we'll give you the judicial positions. But, you know, it's kind of a trust me game here, I think.
It is.
So, okay. Thank you so much. As I said earlier, it's always a pleasure to have you come in and share your heart with us. So, thank you. Let me see. I want to switch real quick because we've got a kind of a technical amendment bill that came over from the House. I want to get Mr. Chamoff in and out of here if I can. So I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 899, open a public hearing on House Bill 2609, so we can kind of resume your time. And then probably enjoy watching the committee, but not that much.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Greg Chamov, Legislative Council, thank you very much for the courtesy of your prompt work on this bill. As Senator Beyer has noted, this is the mother of all bills, but it is so only in terms of the number of sections and the number of pages. It doesn't do anything substantive. During the interim, we go through the Oregon revised statutes and try to find places where things aren't particularly clear or they're just plain mistakes. And this bill brings those items to you for your approval in the form of legislation. With that, I'd be pleased to answer any questions you may have.
Any questions on the presentation by Mr. Chamoff? If not, work session on 2609, and we do have A2 amendments. Mr. Chamoff, are you familiar with these?
These are, as I understand it, conflict amendments of things that have come up already.
Perhaps we should share them with Mr. Chamoff.
Mr. Chair, Madam Counsel, I was not aware of them. But if our conflicts team thinks they're okay by me.
That's kind of scary.
Chair, I move the dash A2 amendment to 2609.
Senator Corney moves the adoption of the dash 2 amendments to House Bill 2609. Discussion.
He didn't mention 100 lawyers worked on this thing for 2 years.
No, he didn't. I think he's wise enough to avoid that conversation.
Thank you for not mentioning that.
No further discussion. Any objections?
Chair, I move House Bill 2609 as amended to the Senate floor that you pass recommendation.
All right, Senator Courtney moves House Bill 2609 as amended by this committee to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Any opposition? If not.
I would love to. Is this my kind of bill?
No objection, then. Bill passes. Senator Duncan will carry the bill on the floor. Thank you very much. Sorry to keep you so long.
This is good stuff.
And we'll reopen the public hearing on Senate Bill 899. Michael Dugan.
Minister Chair and members of the committee, thank you. I'm Mike Dugan. I'm the district attorney for Deschutes County. I'm also a member of the Oregon District Attorney's Legislative Committee, which has reviewed Senate Bill 899, and I'm past president of the Oregon District Attorney's Association. I'm here in both capacities as a member of the Oregon District Attorney's Legislative Committee and also as my own capacity as district attorney for Deschutes County. I find it very refreshing that there is a bill before the committee that will return some money to the counties, and that is a very good thing. As you know, district attorneys oftentimes are given jobs to do without any funding. I am here today to tell you that the District Attorneys Association supports this bill with one exception. Our organization is a firm believer that holding offenders accountable is a good public policy. This bill helps that cause. However, tying deputy district attorney or district attorney salaries to the increased collections of fines is, I believe, a conflict. While that increases accountability, it also raises the appearance of a conflict of interest with district attorneys. We currently do not receive salaries based on the amount of fines or fees that are either imposed or collected, and I don't think that that would be an appropriate way to spend this money. On the other hand, counties have been responsible for the development and upkeep and maintenance of courthouses throughout this state. Every time a new judge is appointed, counties have to provide location for that judge. Every time we add a judge to a county, they have to build a new courtroom, either remodel current courthouses or build a new courthouse. We believe it's entirely appropriate that any monies that are withheld by a judicial district pursuant to Senate Bill 899 under this act be directed to the counties, and we believe that this money should be dedicated to purchasing the technology for courthouses that will increase collections and also make courthouses and district attorney functions much more efficient. It may sound strange that the District Attorneys Association can appear before you and say, take us out of this bill for giving us money. While we certainly think that it's a nice gesture and it's very refreshing, I think the appearance that it creates is somewhat of a concern to us. So I do want to point out that district attorneys in the past and even in this session are being offered more jobs with less resources all the time. For instance, this committee may have before it at some time in the future Senate Bill 146, which will require a recordation of all grand jury testimony. That will cause a great deal more expenses in the county, in the courts, in the district attorneys, just by causing that and allowing that provision than what we have currently before us or on our plate. Or Senate Bill 681, which will create a multidisciplinary teams, mandatory multidisciplinary teams to be organized and run by the district attorney for domestic violence. That bill is also before the committee or before the legislature, and it does not provide any resources for us to operate in that sense. So while the district attorneys have a great job to do, and we take that job very responsibly and we are dedicated to it, we do not believe that providing salaries out of fines would be appropriate. Kind of reminds you of a long time ago, there was a one-man police officer over in Jordan Valley, I think, in eastern Oregon. His salary was paid out of the traffic fines that were acquired. Maybe some of you remember that. He bought the police vehicles, his vests, his guns, and the more tickets he gave, the higher his salary. I don't think district attorneys need to have that on our shoulders. Thank you very much. If you have any questions.
Dugan, thank you very much, Senator Harper.
Actually, that that police officer is a very good friend of mine, and I thought that was a very good idea.
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Harper, he's a friend of mine as well.
Yeah. I'd like it noted that Mr. Dugan comes from a very fine southeastern Oregon family that consists of at least a lawyer and a used car salesman that I'm aware of, maybe more. I appreciate you coming. Well, Mr. Chair, seriously, I'd like to suggest that the committee consider, if we get into fund disposition discussion, I'm going to argue strongly that it just be some kind of a block grant, that we don't micromanage how the local jurisdictions spend the money if we get that far with it. So I think that'd be most appropriate.
And I assume that is that a laser means issue, Mr. Chair, because you're a better.
Yeah, actually, I think a lot of that is ways and means, but it kind of depends on how we structure the subsidy. You know, generally, send a subsidy bill down to Ways and Means. They don't change the substance of it, but we can send it down there with some level of discretion and leave the financial flow, the cash flow issues up to.
Have a discussion if we get much further.
And I used to, when I worked traffic division, I used to get accused of, you know, being financially motivated. I used to tell them, we don't have quotas. I can write as many as I want. Salaries stay the same, so.
And Mr. Chair, I want to continue to say that to the people that I prosecute, that I don't have a quota and I don't get paid by prosecuting you.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Senator Harper, you could also have that discussion in your caucus, Senator Harper.
On?
Block grants or anything, monies, ways and means.
Be happy to.
You're acting with this guy, aren't you? I am. All right, next witness, Paul Snyder.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, I'm Paul Snyder, representing Association of Oregon Counties, and this is a good day for me to recall, you know, don't assume. I assumed I knew what Mr. Dugan was going to say, and I wasn't right. In any case, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, we support Senate Bill 899. We support it for a number of reasons. I'd like to address first some of the concerns that were raised by the Judicial Department. My understanding of the way Senate Bill 899 is structured, I'm not aware that it makes any changes in the accounting processes for the court, except to require additional accounting by district to establish the benchmark upon which the additional funding would be triggered. So in other words, all the funds would go through the Judicial Department accounting system the same way as they do now. At least that's the way I read it. With respect to court facilities and district attorneys, I can tell you that district attorney funding is a top priority for the Association of Oregon Counties. District attorneys are currently funded about 80% by counties, 10% by the state, and 10% by other funds. Although the counties have been increasing their contributions to DA funding over the years, we haven't kept pace with the workload. And the Attorney General's office took a look at that at the request of this Legislative Assembly, and in 1999 reported that the state should increase its proportionate share of DA funding, and then renewed that recommendation in the year 2001. One person has characterized the funding level of district attorneys compared with the workload as prosecutorial immunity by budget. We don't think that's an appropriate public policy, even if it's coming in through the back door. And we'd strongly urge you to provide for additional funding for district attorneys, and that's one of the reasons, frankly, why we like Senate Bill 899. It creates a new floor, a floor that's not currently being reached by any judicial district. It creates the floor at 5% above the highest current collection rate for any judicial district, and then it says that if any judicial district exceeds that new floor by that 5% figure, then the funds would be appropriated as provided in that last section of the bill. I agree with Senator Harper's comment from earlier on. It looks like a win-win situation because that's higher than any current collection record that the Judicial Department has today. I don't think we'd be adverse at all to Senator Harper's other suggestion about not micromanaging, but I can tell you that district attorney funding and, frankly, court facility funding are both very high priorities on the AOC priority list. Sure, that's all I have.
All right. Excellent. Thank you very much. You're the last person that signed up to testify. Is anybody else here that would like to testify on Senate Bill 89 before I close the public hearing? And just so you know what the chair's intent is, we have Senate Bill 70 scheduled sometime next week. We're going to set this bill over to be heard kind of alongside the judicial positions bill so we can talk a little bit more about that. Now, personally, I would encourage the counties and the state court administrator's office to start talking a little bit about how they can work some of these issues out. Because I do think that there's some merit in this, particularly when the Multnomah County Courthouse is now going to fall into the ground. And, you know, our county is pretty well strapped trying to figure out how they're going to make that thing work for us. And I think Senator Harper has some good comments about some needs in his district, too. And I think we all have those kind of concerns. So to the extent that the counties can get together with the state court administrator's office and work out some arrangement, I think that would be positive. And if we do have that much outstanding debt owed to the state, if it's possible to recover it, sounds like a good revenue stream to me. So, Senator Duncan, did you have a...
No, I just was concurring. Clackamas County, the same way. When you were listing counties, I was just saying, yeah, we have those problems, too.
Right. Paul, thank you very much. Appreciate
thank
it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
We'll close in the public hearing on Senate Bill 89, and we're going to open a work session on Senate Bill 220. Council.
We have some, we have this on for hearing 2 weeks ago on the March 15th. It was suggested that there might be some technical amendments to clarify that these were contested case proceedings, and you should have a copy of the dash one amendment. John Carter, who is the proponent for this bill, is here. If the committee would have any additional questions.
Let me just say, Bill, I introduced on behalf of the OSAA, which is the Oregon Student Activity Association, involving appeal processes, which I guess got out of whack. It used to be you could go to a hearings officer, then you appeal that directly to the Court of Appeals. Right, Leonard High Council, and then we did something, I think, inadvertently in the 93 session, which said you've got to go through the circuit courts. And it created another level of appeal that is really, I'm not saying these aren't important issues to come out of OSAA. That's, you know, you think of athletics, but it's not just athletics, it's costly and duplicative. So that's what the bill was for. And there wasn't any adverse testimony, as I recall, on the record. And the attorney for OSAA is here if you have any questions. I'm just trying to fill in here to let you know if you're...
Yeah, no, I'm trying to find the dash.
I have dash one amendments myself. I don't know if you're in my pile.
I seem to have lost mine. So.
Here. You've lost it because of me, probably. Because I just found it here. I don't know why I found this. Wait, is this probably is yours because of handwriting on it. That's probably yours.
I don't have them either, so.
You don't have them either? Well, here, take mine.
But send them to Mr. Sherry, too.
Yeah.
Well, then take mine. You have my back.
I have.
I'm full service, and I just make the motion unless there's objection. It's up to you, Mr. Sherry. Well, if I try to learn in High Council or
Senator Harper?
Oh, I'm just getting a copy of that.
Did I summarize pretty well what the issue is? That we're going to basically go straight to the Court of Appeals from the hearings office. Is that correct?
That's correct, Senator Courtney.
And it was an interview. I don't quite know what happened in 93. I don't know whether it was some, I don't recall there was any kind of major reason why we did what we did, whether it was inadvertent or not.
Well, I think if I recall the testimony, somebody was trying to discipline this group.
I think that, excuse me, if I might clarify, perhaps Don Carter wants to come forward and explain what, since he's been a participant throughout this whole process and it's been quite a bit of investigation, perhaps he can tell you exactly what he's been able to uncover, which is that there's not much in the record.
I don't know how deeply we're getting into this. I remember Bruce Hugo giving some impassioned speech on this deal.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I think the episode that Senator Duncan recalled in our last meeting really had to do with the initiation of the bill in 1987 rather than what happened in 1993. And after the last session before this committee, I asked Allison Weiner, a young attorney in our office who's waiting for the results of the bar exam, to go through the legislative record of the 1993 session. And we found nothing. She listened to every minute of every tape on the session, and there was no discussion of this provision at all. In fact, the bill was a housekeeping bill in 1993.
In 1993.
Going back to 87, there was a strong intention to create the system where the state superintendent became involved in the process, and that's what was accomplished in 87. Pardon?
Who carried the bill?
In 1987, I honestly can't tell you, Senator Minnis. I can't recall, but it wouldn't surprise me.
The young attorney that listened to all the tapes. Does she know?
I do not know who carried it.
Yes.
Right. In 93, the bill was brought by the Joint Interim Committee on Education. Okay? And there was no discussion, and I have a memo that sets out.
That's okay. I think the issue before the committee is it's fairly logical. This is a full hearing in front of an administrative law judge? Or?
Yes. Well, a hearings officer. There's an initial decision by the organization. Then that is appealed to a hearings officer for the state superintendent. And then currently there's an appeal to the circuit court and then to the Court of Appeals. This bill would eliminate the appeal to the circuit court.
And I think it would make Judge Lutzman happy, if I'm not mistaken. So.
Very happy.
Senator Courtney moves the adoption of the Dash 1 amendments to Senate Bill 220.
Yes, I move the Dash 1 amendments, Mr. Chair, to SB 220.
All right. Any discussion? Senator Byron.
Just a question. I don't remember from the last hearing. Would the hearing at the Court of Appeal be then, is it de novo, or would it be a full hearing so that they can relook at the evidence, or is it strictly the procedure that was followed?
No, that would be a case that would be a hearing on the record that was made below.
So it's not a full de novo review?
It's not a full de novo review.
So they're strictly looking at what the judge decided, not evidence, but if the judge or the hearings officer made any mistakes.
Right. One of the things with the contested case proceeding is that the agency has a duty to develop the record below at the hearing officer level. So typically in cases that are appealed to the circuit court, they're not contested cases, and there has been no duty upon the agency to develop the record. And then the record is developed de novo at the circuit court process. This is an unusual route of review in the administrative process to actually have the record developed by the hearings officer and then go to circuit court and then go to the Court of Appeal.
So just to be clear, this is potentially then taking a step away from someone who disagrees with a decision. It's taking a step, another chance for them to prove their case in front of someone.
In essence, that's true. That's correct. All right. Any further discussion? Any objection to the adoption of the Dash 1 amendment? Order.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 220 as amended to the Senate floor with a two-pass recommendation.
Senator Courtney moves Senate Bill 220 as amended by this committee to the floor of the Senate with a two-pass recommendation. Discussion. Any objections? Hearing none. So order, Senator Courtney. I assume.
Yes, I'm sure. Bill.
Thank you. Bye, and good luck on the bar. When did the results come out, by the way?
They don't
2 p.m. on the 9th.
Give or take a minute.
You'll probably be up early.
One of the
to...
All right, next, where are we? Senate Bill 890, public hearing. Velma Hartwig? Okay. And Eileen Ordway? Left also. David Neal.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm David Neal with the Oregon Law Center, and I'm appearing today on behalf of its clients. The Oregon Law Center is a private nonprofit that provides free legal services to low-income people around the state. I'm here to oppose this bill, and I feel like I'm in sort of an anomalous situation because this bill, on its face, seems intended, and I don't have much doubt that it is intended, to help out low-income people. I was hoping to hear the testimony of the proponents to find out that what I assumed about this bill was the case, but my assumption is that this bill probably arose out of a custody case under the psychological parent statute, which is a statute that applies to custody rights between parents and non-parents, in which I'm just assuming that a non-parent probably got custody based on financial considerations. And what this bill says, it amends the psychological custody statute to make financial considerations equal to other evidence that a court would consider in making these determinations under the psychological parent statute. What we're concerned about is that by mentioning financial considerations at all would tend to elevate their importance in courts who are making these decisions. The psychological parent statute now doesn't have any factors in it at all on which the court would base a determination of custody. It just says the court will make a decision based on the best interest of the child. And so including this specific mention of financial considerations would be the only specifically mentioned factor that a court would consider in these kinds of cases. As a practical matter, I think probably most courts make these decisions based loosely on factors that are set out in the statute that regulates custody disputes between parents, and that's ORS 107.137. And that statute lists six specific factors that are listed off in my testimony, none of which has to do with financial considerations. The statute further says that the judge is not to look at any one of these factors alone, but is to consider all of them in making a decision. There is mention of consideration of income in a custody determination, but that only comes up if it's found that income is causing or may cause emotional or physical damage to the child. So it's definitely sort of a second-tier consideration in the general custody statute. So summarizing here, I think that financial considerations are not appropriately much of a factor that a court considers now in making these determinations, and we would urge you to take no further action on this bill because I think that by mentioning them specifically, it elevates their importance in an inappropriate way.
Even though it says that you wouldn't give it any additional weight than other evidence, you still think that it elevates that?
But, Mr. Chair, I think it does elevate it because under the 107.137 that applies to parent versus parent cases, it's not to be considered equally with the other factors that are listed in that statute. It's only to be considered if it can be shown that it's going to have a detrimental effect to the child
the emotional or physical development of the child.
Okay. Any questions? Concerns?
Mr. Chairman, Dave, I'm sure it does make a good point. I guess I'm just disappointed that Velma isn't here, but certainly by the written testimony, there is an indication that maybe some judge weighed that differently and would love to hear that it was elevated. I mean, that's the impression you get from the testimony, and I'm just sorry that we can't hear what it was that brought this action in the first place. So.
As a matter of background, the council said there's a bill on the House side where apparently some issues are settled. So.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, there is a recent United States Supreme Court case called the Troxell case, and there was an interim work group that resulted in a bill before the House that actually is set for work session this afternoon that completely redoes this statute and the grandparent visitation statute, and sets up a whole new way of evaluating those cases. And I think that it may be that this committee would want to wait until that bill gets here and look at that bill as it's proposed, to bring it in line with the constitutional decision in Troxell, and consider whether this kind of factor would fit into that kind of a scheme that's been set up there. But it may be better to do it at that point in time if the committee's inclined to look at it.
Okay. Any other questions, sir?
I don't mean to argue with you, but you argue very cogently about it. I'm not saying it's with the bill, but you test me with your conclusion that the way this bill is written, that it allows evidence of financial ability to be on an equal footing with other designated areas of consideration. I find that very interesting, counsel. I'm not sure I get to where you get, given your reading and given the knowledge of other parts of the law which deal with which consideration shall go with custody. I think the chair made a good point. Its references to not giving more weight, and you interpret that, and I'm not mistaken in your verbal testimony to say, therefore, it's given equal weight to that language gives equal weight to other existing specified considerations. I find that interesting, counsel.
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Courtney, I think that is an interpretation that a court could make. Fairly.
That's okay. Now that you say could make versus did make, I'm a little more. We're having fun here, because even by your written testimony, this is we're getting into a law school little who's the smarter kid in class type situation here.
Please share.
I'm not going to belabor this because my members are already packing up, getting ready to leave, because they're not interested in this. But we could have fun, you and I, in your interpretation of this. I find it delightful.
I'm not a lawyer on this one, but I find it interesting too that on the plain surface of the language in the bill, it seems to say exactly the opposite of what you're suggesting a judge would arrive at in terms of conclusion. So.
Well, Mr. Chair, I think we think about these statutes and language that is in the family law statutes. We think about ways that this could go wrong, perhaps, and that's what I was thinking, that a judge could reasonably look at this language and say and think to him or herself, I can take financial considerations into account as a factor along with the other factors that are in this that I would consider, whatever they are, which aren't actually specified in the psychological parent statute as it exists now.
Whereas it's currently not mentioned. As okay.
Mr. Chair, that's correct.
It is mentioned in other statutes.
Mr. Chair, it is mentioned in the parent versus parent statute, but is a lesser consideration than the others that are listed.
Had we heard about 825 in the past?
825, we're not.
823, I mean.
823, we're not hearing.
We could have established legislative intent for the judges.
We're going to be adjourned. Thank you, David.
Thank you.